Soil is a vital living ecosystem that supports plants, animals, and humans. It's teeming with billions of bacteria, fungi, and other microbes that are the foundation of a complex ecosystem. Viewing soil this way reflects a fundamental shift in the way we care for it.
Today on the podcast, we're talking to Dan Kittredge of the Bionutrient Food Association. Welcome to the show, Dan.
My name is Dan Kittredge. I'm a lifelong organic farmer. Grew up on an organic farm in Massachusetts. My parents ran an organic farming organization, so I come from that community. When I got married and started a family, I realized that I needed to learn a few things to be successful. That what I had been taught was not complete as I could perceive it. When I saw pests and diseases attacking my crops, and I didn't see them attacking nature, I thought maybe I wasn't doing things as well as nature was, and so I had a few things to learn. So I've been studying and practicing and now teaching for the last 15 years or so what I call principles of biological systems. How did nature evolve to work, specifically as it pertains to plants and understanding more deeply that when we work with nature, things work more well. So foundationally, it seems that the microbes, the microbiome, the biology that is within us all, on us all, surrounding us all, is central to health. But as it pertains to food specifically, there is a profound variation in nutrient levels in food between this carrot and that carrot, or this steak and that steak, based on how they were raised. And when you are working in harmony with nature, not only is the soil healthier and the crops more, the crops healthier, but the food is more flavorful and more nutritious. So, my background is in working to create a reality where our food has more nutrition in it. And I think there's some amazing opportunities there for solutions to be envisioned and implemented. At this point in time, it seems like there's a lot of imminent cataclysm or existential dread or, concern about the future. And I think that only really comes from our disconnection from nature. And as we do learn to work more well with nature, we can understand that most of these problems will rapidly dissipate. As I said, about 15 years ago, around 2005, 2006, I got married and started a family, and had found no better lifestyle than for raising a family than sort of the homesteading one that I had been raised in myself, and realized I did not have the skills to make an economic venture of it. I was not a good enough farmer, even though I grew up on an organic farm, to pay the bills. And so I started studying, going to conferences, reading books, attending seminars in the wintertime, and then practicing different techniques in the summertime. A lot of what I found most valuable, I picked up in the Acres community, Acres USA, founded by Charles Walters, and I think about 50 years ago now, in the early 70s. It was there that I learned about the fact that there was a very meaningful difference in nutrient levels in food. They talked about the refractometer and Brix as the best empirical tool we had at that point for testing it. It can be verified by your tongue or your nose. This carrot tastes good, that one doesn't. This tomato tastes good, that one doesn't. And that correlated directly with pest and disease resistance, plant health, soil health, and human health. And this was revelatory for me. I had not heard in my 20 plus years at that point in time in the alternative ag community these things said so directly and so confidently. And I basically went to the elders at Acres with a manifesto and a form, and I said, I want to bring forth this information about food quality. I think it's really important, but I won't presume to as some kid without your blessing. And so I did in public with them all there in the same room, get, you know, Gary Zimmer and Jerry Brunetti and Dan Scow and Arden Anderson and the whole list of that community to sign a paper saying we approve you taking this forward. At that point in time, the term nutrient density didn't really exist. Even the concept of nutrient variation in food wasn't really being discussed. And so it was in conversation, I think, with Arden Anderson about what do we call this thing, that we sort of settled on the term nutrient density, and I started propagating it at that point in time in 2008 or so. Really the initial focus was working with growers to help them understand that only when their plants are in healthy relationship with microbiome, with the microbes in the soil and on their leaf surface, only when that's occurring should we expect those plants to be healthy, to be able to be, you know, pest and disease resistant, etc. And there are different environmental conditions that are inhibiting that, depending on where you live. In California, the issue may be not enough water. In New England, the issue may be not enough minerals, you know, and some areas not enough carbon, some areas where lots of chemicals have been applied, not enough microbes in the soil. So really the foundational precept is that let's create a dynamic in your soil where the microbes can flourish and stand back and get out of the way, because nature's been doing this for some number of hundreds of millions of years. We don't need to try to understand and control everything. Initially, our work I started an organization called the Bionutrient Food Association in 2010. Our mission was to increase quality in the food supply. By quality, we're talking about flavor, aroma, nutritive value, health-giving attribute, which we think correlates to soil health and plant health and human health. And we started talking about this idea, and we also, but it was primarily focused on how-to for growers. But always a part of it was, imagine if you as a farmer selling your crop or a consumer purchasing food could make a decision based on its inherent nutritional value as opposed to its label or price, right? Usually we learn to purchase based on, is it organic or not organic? Is it maybe local or not local? Is it $1 a pound or $1.50 a pound? That's really the metrics we have to make purchasing decisions. They're not focused on inherent nutritional value. And so we began thinking about strategically how could we bring forth a dynamic where choices could be made in the market based on nutritional value as opposed to some of these more, I call it aesthetic and volume metrics. And so our concept was to give everyone the ability to make their own decisions directly and not have to trust some outside system. I use the metaphor of, religion versus spirituality. You know, in some traditions, you need to have a priest who is your interlocutor with the divine before you can have any direct communication. In other traditions, you're taught that you have the capacity to have direct communication. So should we trust a label, or should we be able to test ourselves, if that metaphor makes sense? And the way to do that is basically through a spectrometer. We have the capacity through small, portable, handheld tools now to flash a light at a crop, whether it's a carrot or a piece of beef or milk, and see relatively what's in it or what's not. So you can flash a light at a carrot, boop, this is junk, boop, boop, this one's decent, boop, boop, that one's good. There's a massive variation in nutrient levels in food. No one's really properly documented that, and no one's built the infrastructure to support decisions being made from that. But we've been, I think, leading that conversation for a decade now. I continue to be surprised by the fact that it seems that there are not any other organizations or companies out there actively engaging this conversation. I feel, in one way, like we're ahead of the curve, and another way, like maybe we're out in left field, because if it's as important an idea as I think it is, I think there would be some competition in the space. Maybe, I guess what I've come to, the story I tell myself, is that we're just a few steps ahead of the broader conversation. And what we're trying to do with this is to ensure that it all is done completely transparently and openly, so that the data sets upon which these calibrations are built, upon which these definitions are built, belongs in the commons and is never able to be proprietarily controlled or documented by or manipulated by whether they're a corporate interest or a government agency. So it's a complicated question. What is quality if we're going to actually try to use Western empiricism to honestly define relative value in a biological system, which has tens of thousands of different variables? It's a very complicated project, and it's expensive, and generally when these kinds of things are done by, you know, companies, they're done in a way to facilitate their direct profit, and it's done in a black boxed or controlled kind of way. I think because it's a complicated project and because there's no easy way to profit off of it, is part of why it hasn't been done yet. But, well, a couple things I've seen. One is, I mean, just to talk about the actual facts of the nutritional variation in food, I think it's good to just give some basic numbers. We've been running lab tests now for 3 years on crops. We've been sampling crops from grocery stores, from farmers markets, from across the country, from across Europe now. Organic, not organic, regenerative, biodynamic, permaculture, you know, hydroponic. We've been really trying to survey the supply chain and see what's out there, what's available, and begin to define that variation. Until we know what optimal and most minimal are, we can't say this is the 20th percentile or the 80th percentile. And when we're looking at the elements in a crop, like the amount of calcium in a carrot, for instance, we may find that this carrot has three times as much calcium as that carrot, or spinach iron in spinach, maybe this leaf of spinach has 18 times as much iron as that leaf of spinach. I mean, those are very significant quantity differences. Those are just the elements. When we look at the health-giving compounds, the antioxidants and polyphenols, it's more like 75 to 1 or 200 to 1. So the fact is that all carrots are not equal. All beef is not equal. All milk is not equal. The variation is massive, and it seems from our data collection thus far that it connects most well to how that was raised, how it was grown, not to the label upon which it's marketed under, but the actual management practices underneath it. So what we have seen as far as variations in growth, I mean, just speaking for myself as a farmer, I grew up on an organic farm where we regularly struggled with insects and diseases, whether it was flea beetles or corn earworms or Colorado potato beetles or powdery mildew or blights, or, you know, you run the list of the things that are sort of run of the mill, everybody experiences them. I just assumed that's the way things were, and as I began to shift my management practices, I almost immediately saw that the pest and disease pressure dissipated. I could plant my cucumbers in the spring and be harvesting off of them at frost in the fall. My potatoes were killed by frost, not by potato bugs. Didn't really matter what the crop was. When you create that reality where it's got more of what it needs to be healthy, it inherently has that resilience, resistance, that functional, you know, we don't need insecticides or fungicides anymore because the crops are indigestible to those pathogens. As we've been teaching these courses across North America and Europe and been sharing them around the world now, we're seeing very similar results, that the growers, when they engage in these principles of supporting life, doesn't matter if they're in, you know, Texas or Ireland or California or, you know, Alaska. The concept of plants have evolved to work with their microbiomes, and when you as a caretaker of the land understand that and can identify the limiting factors and address them, then things work more well. That seems to be operating across the board. And so that's what we found, is when growers are engaging in these practices that support life, that not only do they have better economic returns, better pest and disease resistance, they have dramatically improved nutrient levels as well. You know, in this time, there are so many apparent struggles, so many things that seem difficult and overwhelming, and I guess one opportunity is to just roll over and, you know, put your head under the pillow and, you know, hope for the best. But I would propose that we are the ones who will affect the reality that comes, and a viable strategy to have a positive effect on reality is something that I sense a lot of people are looking for. And I suggest that most people eat food just about everywhere. People eat food, and unfortunately, most people spend money to buy food. You know, there was a time when that did not occur, that most people grew their food, but in the current time, most people spend money to buy food, and money seems to drive the world to some large degree. And so our thought is, if we can come together around using the money you buy food with to choose food that's better for you and your family, that by its very nature incentivizes farmers to focus on producing food that's more nutritious as opposed to more volume, which has a profoundly positive effect on the environment and the ecosystem. By choosing to buy food that's more nutritious for you and your family, you have the ability to really positively affect the health outcomes, the overall vitality, you know, resilience to chronic disease, etc., of yourself and your family. I think, you know, when you have more energy, when you are healthier, you are a, you know, have the opportunity to be a more whole member of a community, of a culture. I think a lot of us are struggling with barely being able to make it through the day, being overwhelmed by the logistics of life, and having that vigor and that vitality and that resilience within us is what we all need to be able to step forth into, you know, building a culture that we feel better about. So our thought is choosing the food that's best for you and your family is a profoundly radical act that can bring about the kind of cultural revitalization that we're probably all hoping for. And so we're not focusing on, we're against that, or we're against that, or we're, these are bad, or this is wrong. Let's focus on what we do want. And I think we can all probably agree that we want food that's more nutritious. And strategically, by coming together around that, I think we have the opportunity to really bring forth some very positive outcomes.
The Soil Health Podcast is a production of the Minokin Farm. Minokin Farm exists to foster natural resource education and systems approach conservation. This 150-acre demonstration farm, located just east of Bismarck, North Dakota, was established in 2009 and draws people from all over the world. The farm is owned and operated by Burley County Soil Conservation District, which has an office in Bismarck, North Dakota. Additional financial and technical support is provided by the North Dakota Department of Health Water Quality Division, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture.